He still owes them a debt of love and service which must be rendered at some future time, and therefore in a later life these egos will be brought together and so placed that he may have an opportunity for doing good toward them. If he does not then take the opportunity, he may in a still later life render inadequate service to someone else. It is for his sake that service must be rendered so that the love nature may be evolved and expanded to become universal and all-inclusive. The same rule holds good in all other cases, and as the extreme conditions make the best illustrations, we may take as another instance the relationship between a murderer and his victim. After death he suffered in purgatory and the actual debt is the wiped out. But a tie has been established between these two egos, and in a future life they will again meet so that the murderer may have the opportunity of serving his erstwhile victim, that they may become reconciled as friends. Fellow feeling must become universal, since it is the basic principle in the kingdom of God. When the break occurs between and the mind of an insane person who dies, is, as a matter of course, still rampant, and often causes the ego much trouble during its existence in the desire world, for the ego, of course, is at no time insane. What appears as insanity arises from the fact that the ego has no control over its vehicles. The worst of all, obviously, is where the mind itself has become affected and the ego is tied to the personality for a long time until these vehicles are worn away. Purgatory 101-101. In the beginning of the war, the desire bodies of the combatants whirled at an awful rate, and it was noted that, while people passing over from sickness, old age, or ordinary accidents regain consciousness in a short time, varying from a few minutes to a few days, those killed in war were in a great many cases unconscious for several weeks, and strange to say, those who were almost torn to pieces seemed to wake up much quicker than thousands that had only insignificant wounds. This puzzle was not solved for many months. Before we study the causes underlying this phenomenon, we must first record that when the people who had thus died in intense anger during the first part of the war awoke in the invisible world, they usually started to fight their enemies anew, and until the great educational work started by the elder brothers and their invisible helpers bore fruit, these people went about with maimed bodies and in great anguish because of their dear ones left behind. Now such occurrences are extremely rare and soon settled, for all have been taught that thought will create a new arm, limb, or face, the patriotic hatred is gone, and enemies able to speak each other's language often fraternize with benefit to both. Purgatory is far from being a place of punishment, it is perhaps the most beneficent realm in nature, for because of purgation we are born innocent life after life. The tendencies to commit the same evil for which we suffered remain with us, and temptations to commit the same wrongs will be placed in our path until we have consciously overcome the evil here. Temptation is not sin, however, the sin is in yielding. Thus we see that it is not an avenging deity that makes purgatory or hell for us, but our own individual evil habits and acts. According to the intensity of our desires will be the time of our suffering entailed in their expurgation. In the cases mentioned it would have been no suffering to the drunkard to lose his worldly possessions. If he had any, he did not cling to them. Neither would it have caused the miser any pain to have been deprived of intoxicants. It is safe to say that he would not have cared had there not been a drop of liquor in the world. But he did care about his gold, and the drunkard cared about his drink. And so the unerring law gave to each that which was needed to purge him of his unhallowed desires and evil habits. This is the law that is symbolized in the scythe of the reaper, death, the law that says, whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. It is the law of cause and effect, which rules all things in the three worlds, in every realm of nature, physical, moral, and mental. Everywhere it works inexorably, adjusting all things, restoring the equilibrium, wherever even the slightest action has brought about a disturbance, as all action must. The result may be manifested immediately or it may be delayed for years or for lives, but sometime, somewhere, just and equal retribution will be made. The student should particularly note that its work is absolutely impersonal. There is in the universe neither reward nor punishment, All is the result of invariable law. To sum up, then, we may say that all our debts are paid in purgatory. So far as the commission of wrong is concerned, our debts of love, friendship, and service remain for liquidation in later lives. Chapter 6. Earthbound Spirits and Their Prey. To understand mediumship, it is necessary to know that at death the same separation takes place as in sleep, but it is permanent. The so-called dead have ego, mind, and desire body and are often conscious of the world they have left for some time after. Some cling to the earth life, and cannot set their minds to learn the new lessons. We call them earthbound spirits. They cannot function in the visible world without a body, however, and so they take advantage of the fact that all spirits are not confined with equal rigor to the prison of the dense body. Those who are most closely bound are the rank materialists. Those whose cords do not bind them so tightly are impressionists, capable of answering in some measure to spiritual vibrations. Persons of positive character thus constituted, if they develop, do so by their own will, and become trained occultists. Those of weak will can only develop by the aid of others, and in a negative way. They are the prey of earthbound spirits who constitute themselves spirit guides and develop their victims as transmediums. Or, if the connection between the victim's dense and vital bodies be particularly lax, into materializing mediums. Earthbound spirits gravitate to the lower regions of the desire world, which interpenetrates the ether, and are in constant and close touch with those people on earth most favorably situated for aiding them in their evil designs. 103. They usually stay in this earthbound condition for 50, 60, or 75 years, but extreme cases have been found in which such people remain for centuries. So far as the writer has been able to discover up to the present time, there seems to be no limit to what they may do or how soon they will be let go. But all the while they are piling up for themselves an awful load of sin, nor can they escape suffering therefore, for the vital body reflects and etches deeply into a record of their misdeeds. And when at last they do let go and enter the purgatorial existence, they meet the retribution which they well deserve. This suffering is naturally lengthy in proportion to the time they have continued their nefarious practices after the death of the dense body, another proof that though the mills of God grind slowly, yet they grind exceeding small. When the spirit has left the sin body, as we call this vehicle, in contrast to the soul body, to ascend to the second heaven, it does not disintegrate as quickly as the ordinary shell left behind by normal people, for the consciousness in it is enhanced by its dual composition. That is to say, being composed of both a vital and a desire body, it has an individual or a personal consciousness that is very remarkable. It cannot reason, but there is a low cunning present which makes it seem as though it were actually endowed with a spiritual presence, an ego. And this enables it to live a separate life for many centuries. The departed spirit meanwhile enters the second heaven, but having done no work on earth to desire or merit a prolonged stay there or in the third heaven, it only stays there sufficiently long enough to create a new environment for itself, and it is then reborn much earlier than usual to satisfy the craving for material things which draw it so strongly. In such cases, people of an evil nature, where the animal nature has been paramount, where there has been no soul expression in the preceding earth life, the division in the vital body cannot take place at death, for there is no dividing line. In such a case, if the vital body should gravitate back to the dense body and the gradually disintegrate, the effect of a very evil life would not be so far-reaching, but unfortunately there is in such cases an interlocking grip of the vital and desire bodies which prevents separation. We have seen that where a man lives mostly in the higher nature, his spiritual vehicles are nourished to the detriment of the lower. Conversely, where his consciousness is centered in the lower vehicles, he strengthens them immeasurably. It should be understood that the life of is not terminated by the departure of the spirit, it has a residual life and consciousness. It is amazing when one searches the memory of nature of the past to find how prevalent this interlocking condition of the desire and vital bodies was in former centuries and millenniums. That in our own historical times savagery should have been so common and so brutal, and that might was the measure of right absolutely and beyond dispute, was, to say the least, quite a shock to the writer. It has been taught that selfishness and desire were purposely fostered under the regime of Jehovah to give incentive to action. This in the course of time had so hardened that when the advent of Christ took place, there was almost no heaven life among the people then living. Nor were these ancient people content to do all the evil they could in life and then get away, but they must even have their war horses killed, their weapons laid down in their coffins, and everything else possible done to keep them here, for the ether in those things which had belonged to them during life had an attraction for them, and was a means further to keep them within the earth's atmosphere. It enabled them to haunt, for they actually did haunt their castles for years and years, and of course it was not only the rich or the warrior classes, but also others. In cases of blood feuds where people were slain, the ghosts incited their relatives to avenge them by remaining about and helping them to carry out bloody deeds. Thus they perpetuated evil and kept the world in a turmoil of blood and strife. Nor is this condition entirely broken in what we call modern days. Wherever a person dies who has fostered malice and hatred in his heart, these interlock the desire and vital bodies and make him a more serious menace to the community than anyone can imagine who has not investigated this subject. Therefore, if for no other reason, capital punishment should be abolished so that we may not let loose upon the community such dangerous characters to incite the morally weak to follow in their footsteps. The desire world is the abode of those who have died, for some time subsequent to that event, and we may mention that the so-called dead very often stay for a long while among their still living friends. Unseen by their relatives, they go about the familiar rooms. At first they are often unaware of the condition mentioned, that two persons may be in the same place at the same time, and when they seat themselves in a chair or at the table, a living relative may take the supposedly vacant seat. The man we mistakenly call dead will at first hurry out his seat to escape being sat upon, but he soon learns that being sat upon does not hurt him in his altered condition, and that he may remain in his chair regardless of the fact that his living relative is also sitting there. There are other classes who, so to speak, become immortal in evil. Not quite that, but the interlocking of their vital and desire bodies forces them to stay in the lower regions of the invisible world nearest to the physical world in which we live. This class may consequently be met with for a considerable number of years after they have passed away from the body. It is indeed a curious fact that sometimes these vile persons are sought by former friends who have passed out of the body and need help to contact the physical world. The writer remembers such an instance occurring a few years ago, when an aged relative was about to pass over to the other side. She looked forward very anxiously to seeing her mate who had gone on before her, but as he had already reached the first heaven, his arms and body had passed away, and only the head remained. Therefore he would scarcely be able to show himself to her when she had passed over, much less influence conditions at the time of the passing, and these were far from being to his liking. Certain things were being done to retard the severance of the spirit from the flesh, and considerable distress was occasioned to the person thereby. In his anxiety over this condition, the husband of the lady secured assistance from a friend whose interlocking vital and desire bodies made it easy for him to manifest. This spirit took off Cain standing in the room, and knocked a book out of the hand of the passing lady's daughter, which so frightened those present that they stopped their demonstration, allowing the mother to pass out. The poor man who had performed this phenomenon had already been more than 20 years in the invisible world, and so far as the writer can perceive, there seems to be no sign of dissolution of the sin body wherein he had clothed himself. He may remain therefore perhaps twice or three times as long. The writer was at one time quite apprehensive of the effect which war might have in respect to locking the desire and vital bodies together and bring to birth legions of monsters to afflict future generations. But it is with great thankfulness that he records his conviction that we need have no fear on that score. Only when people are premeditatively malicious and vindictive, and persistently harbor a desire and a purpose to get even with someone, only when such feelings are hugged, nursed, and entertained do they harden the vital body and cause the interlocking grip of these vehicles. We know from the records of the Great War that the rank and file have no such sentiments against one another, but that enemies meet as friends whenever chance brings them into such a relationship that they may converse one with another. So, though war is responsible for the awful mortality now and will cause deplorable infant mortality in a future age, it will be blameless with regard to the dreadful diseases engendered by obsession and the crimes suggested by these demoniacal sin bodies. Following the above investigations, the writer attempted a number of experiments with spirits who were in the higher realms of the ether, having just passed out, and with people who had been in the desire world for a longer or shorter time, some of them being almost ready for the first heaven. A number of spirits who had departed this life kindly cooperated as subjects. The aim of the experiments was to determine how far it would be possible for them to clothe themselves in the materials of the lower etheric and even the gaseous regions. It was noticed that those who had just passed out could quite readily endure lower ether vibrations, although being of good character they were not well satisfied to remain there longer than necessary, for they were uncomfortable. But as we tried people from successively higher regions of the desire world up to the first heaven, it became more and more difficult to wrap themselves in ether or descent into it. The consensus of opinion was that it was like going down into a deep well, that a smother. It was also found that it was absolutely impossible for anyone in the physical to see them. We tried by every method of suggestion to arouse the people in rooms which we visited, to a sense of our presence, but we found no response, though in a number of cases the forms which we condensed were so opaque that it seemed to the writer as if they were nearly as dark as those physical people whom we desired to attract. We placed our experimental subjects between the physical people and the light. Nevertheless, we had no success, either with those who were from the higher realms or with those who had passed out recently and were able to stay in the given position and density for a considerable time. Chapter 5. The Borderland. It is a mistake to think that heaven is a place of unalloyed happiness for all. No one can reap any more happiness than he sowed on earth. The measure of our joy there will be the good deeds we did in earth life. The panorama of life etched into our desire bodies just after death forms the basis of our enjoyment in heaven, as it was the decreer of our suffering in purgatory. There are two classes for whom post-mortem existence is particularly blank and monotonous, the materialist and the man who was so absorbed in his material business that he never gave a thought to the spiritual worlds. The reason not far to seek. They led good, moral lives as a rule, indulged in none of the vices which find their expurgation in the purgatorial regions of the lower desire world, but neither have they done any good such as would find its fruition in feelings of joy in the first heaven. To have given even large sums of money for the building of churches, libraries, or parks will help nothing there, unless the giver took particular interest in his gift, and thus gave himself with the money. Merely to give money will bring affluence in a future life, but to give oneself is more than money, it is soul growth. The materialistic businessman therefore goes to the fourth region, which is a sort of borderland between purgatory and the first heaven. He is too good to suffer in purgatory and not good enough to have a first heaven life. He has still a keen longing for business, with no interests, save desires that cannot be gratified there. His life is an unenviable monotony, though he suffers in no other way. The out-and-out materialist, who denies God and has the idea that death is annihilation, is in the worst of straits. He sees his mistake, yet having so disassociated himself from spiritual ideas, he often cannot believe but that this is a prelude to annihilation. The dreadful suspense wears terribly on such people. And it is not an uncommon sight to see them going about murmuring to themselves, is it not soon the end? And, worst of all, if anyone who is instructed tries to inform them, they will deny the existence of spirit there as much as they did in earth life, calling him visionary for thinking that there is anything beyond. There are many people, of the belief that when a man pays his debts, cares for his family, and lives a moral life here, he will be all right thereafter, who have a rather unenviable time in the desire world after death. They are, of course, to be looked up to from the standpoint of this life only, but at the present time we are required to cultivate at least some altruistic tendencies in order to progress beyond our present evolutionary status. We find the people who have neglected the higher duties in the fourth region of the desire world after death. There is the businessman who paid 100 cents on the dollar, who dealt honestly by everyone, who worked for the material improvement of his city and country as a good citizen, paid his employees fair wages, treated his wife and family with consideration, gave them all possible advantages, etc. He may even through them have built a church, or at least given liberally to it, or he may have built libraries or founded institutes, etc. But he did not give himself. He took interest in the church only for the sake of his family or for the sake of respectability. He had no heart in it. All his heart was in his business, in making money, or in attaining a worldly position. When he enters the desire world after death, he is too good to go to purgatory and not good enough to go to heaven. He has dealt justly with everyone and wronged nobody. Therefore, he has nothing to expiate. But neither has he done any good that could give him a life in the first heaven where the good of his past life is assimilated. Therefore he is in the fourth region between heaven and hell, as it were. The fourth region is the center of the desire world and the feeling there is most intense. The man still feels a keen desire for business, but since he can neither buy nor sell there, his life is a most dreadful monotony. All that he gave to the churches, institutes, etc., counts as nothing because of his lack of heart. Only when we give for love will a gift avail to bring happiness hereafter. It is not the amount that we give, but the spirit that accompanies the gift, which matters. Therefore, it is within the power of everyone to give and thus benefit himself and others. Indiscriminate money giving, however, often causes people to become thriftless and indigent, but by giving heartfelt sympathy, by helping people to believe in themselves and start life with fresh ardor when they have fallen by the wayside, by giving ourselves in service rendered humanity, we lay up treasures in heaven and give more than gold. Christ said, "The poor are with us." Always, we may not be able to bring them from poverty to riches and that may not be best for them, but we can encourage them to learn the lesson that is to be learned in poverty. We can help them to a better view of life, and unless the man does that also, he will not be all right when he passes out. He will suffer that dreadful monotony in order to learn that he must fill his life with something of real value, and thus in a succeeding life his conscience will spur him on to do something better than to grind out dollars. However, he will not neglect his material duties, for that is as bad as to spurn spiritual endeavor. Chapter 6, The First Heaven. During the earlier part of its evolution, mankind committed the most atrocious crimes because actuated entirely by selfishness and disregard for other people's feelings. In those early lives we were cunning, cruel, and seldom did a good deed. In fact, it is recorded that at that time man spent the whole of the interval between lives in the purgatorial regions expiating the crimes he had committed during his physical life, and there was no heaven life to speak of. That was the condition spoke of in the Bible as lost in trespasses and sin, which made it necessary for the Christ to enter the earth and attempt the task of raising the vibrations, so that altruism might gradually conquer egoism and give us a heaven life upon which promotion and progression in our evolutionary career could be based. We saw in the last lecture how the evil acts of life and our undesirable habits are dealt with by the impersonal law of consequence, and make for good in future lives, and to illustrate we noted its operation in such cases as those of the murderer, suicide, drunkard, and miser. These are extreme cases, however, and there are many people who have lived good moral lives, tainted more by petty selfishness, which is the besetting sin of our age, than by actual pronounced evil. For them the stay in the purgatorial regions of the desire world is of course correspondingly shortened and the incidental suffering is lightened. Thus in time all pass to the upper regions of the desire world where the first heaven is located. This is the summerland of the spiritualists. Of the matter of this region, the thoughts and fancies of people during life build the actual forms they see in their imagination. It is a characteristic of the inner worlds that the matter in them is readily molded by thought and will, and all these fantastic forms created by people go about, ensouled by elementals and enduring as long as the thought or desire which formed them endures. Around Christmas time, for instance, Santa Claus actually lives and rides around in his sleigh. There are all sorts of variety of him, and he remains in vigorous health for a month or more until the desires of the children who created him cease to flow in that direction, then he fades away till he is recreated next year. The New Jerusalem, with its pearly streets and sea of glass, and all the other pious and moral fancies of the church people are there also. Purgatory has its thought form devil, with horns and cloven hoof, created by the thoughts of people, but in this upper part of the desire world we find only that which is good and desirable in human aspirations. Here the student revels in libraries and is able to pursue his studies in a much more effective way than while confined to the dense body. If he desires a book, presto, it is there. The artist by his imagination shapes his models perfectly. He paints with living fiery colors instead of with the dead and dull pigments of earth, which are the physical artist's despair, for here in earth it is impossible for him to reproduce the tints he sees with his inner vision, but the desire world is the world of color par excellence, and therefore he obtains his heart's desire in the first heaven, and receives inspiration and power to continue his work in future lives. The sculptor likewise finds this part of the post-mortem state a joy and an upliftment. He shapes with facility the plastic materials of this world into the statues he dreamed of in earth life. The musician is also benefited, but he is not yet in the true world of tone. That ocean of harmony, where the heavenly music of spheres is heard, is in the part the region of concrete thought which, in the esoteric Christian religion, we call second heaven. And so the musician hears only the echoes of the celestial strains, yet they are sweeter than any he ever heard on earth, and his soul revels in their exquisite harmony, the earnest of better things to come. Here we also find all the little children, who go directly to this place after passing out, and if their friends could see them, there would be no mourning, for theirs is rather enviable life. They are always met by some relative or friend who has previously passed out, and are taken care of in every respect. There are people who lay up a great deal of treasure for themselves by giving much of their time to the invention of plays and toys for the little ones, and thus life in this first heaven is spent in the most beautiful way by the children, nor is their instruction neglected. There are brought together in classes, not only according to age and capability, but according to temperament, and particularly instructed in the effects of desires and emotions, which can so easily be done in a world where those things can be objectively demonstrated. Thus they are taught by object lessons the benefit of cultivating good and altruistic desires, and many a soul who lives a moral life now, owes it to such a cause as the death in infancy and 15 or 20 years in the first heaven before a new incarnation was entered upon. In the lower regions of the desire world the whole body of each being may be seen, but in the highest regions only the head seems to remain. Raphael, who, like many other people in the Middle Ages, was gifted with a so-called second sight, pictures that condition for us in his Sistine Madonna, now in the Dresden Art Gallery, where Madonna and the Christ Child are represented as floating in a golden atmosphere and surrounded by a host of genie heads. Conditions which the occult investigator knows to be in harmony with actual facts. In the higher regions of the desire world the confusion of tongues gives place to a universal mode of expression which absolutely prevents misunderstandings of our meaning. There each of our thoughts takes a definite form and color perceptible to all, and this thought symbol emits a certain tone, which is not a word, but it conveys our meaning to the one we address no matter what language he spoke on earth. Chapter 7, The Second Heaven. In the course of time every man makes ready to ascend into the second heaven, which is located in the region of concrete thought. All good aspirations and desires of the past life are etched into and branded upon the mind, which then contains all that is of permanent value. The ego withdraws from the desire body, which is then but an empty shell, and, clothed only in the mind, it ascends into the second heaven.